Welcome back to another action-packed episode of Taxed Enough Already, where we only talk about exhilarating topics like economics, high finance, and taxation. I'm your host, Dan Newwash. In this episode, my colleague and our Director of Operations, Jesse Somdahl, discuss some interesting trends we're seeing in the labor market. We have a specific strategy that we use for employers that have 50 or more employees on payroll called a PTR plan, or Payroll Tax Reduction Plan. A PTR plan is a unique and proprietary strategy we've developed that allows us to reduce the payroll tax medical expenses for an employer while simultaneously providing employees with recaptured tax dollars that they can use to procure better benefits for themselves and their families. So this strategy provides a financial benefit to employers through that reduction in payroll taxes and medical expenses while simultaneously providing financial and well-being benefits to its employees by allowing them to utilize recaptured tax dollars. And it does so without impacting the employee's net pay or take-home pay. It also does not negatively impact their benefits at all because they're able to procure better benefits that can greatly reduce, or in some cases even eliminate, out-of-pocket medical expenses and put money away for themselves and their families. Now, when we start researching the feasibility of this for a client, we put together a report for them called a PROI report, or Payroll Return on Investment report. In that report, we research the current labor market and economic conditions that may affect that employer, and we also do a comparative analysis against their largest labor market competitors. So to be clear, we aren't necessarily researching their direct market competitors. We're researching their competitors that are looking for employees that have the same skill sets as their employees. When we do that comparative analysis, we look at five primary categories: employee growth, average employee tenure, which is how long on average an employee works for that employer, average reported compensation, benefits rating, which is normally done on a 5-point scale and is comprised by current and past surveyed employees, and what we call a positive or negative attrition rate. The attrition rate is calculated based on if more employees are leaving that employer to join a labor market competitor, which would be a negative attrition rate, or if more employees are leaving those labor market competitors to join the company we're doing the research for, which would be a positive attrition rate. We've been producing these reports for our clients for a little over 5 years, and in that 5 years, we have almost always seen a correlation tied to the benefits rating. However, recently, we have seen a shift in that correlation. Now, we do have some visuals, charts, graphs, etc. as a part of this episode. So if you're listening to it in its audio or podcast format, I'd encourage you to go to our website, Rumble page, or YouTube page to see the video version. So when we start working with a new client or a new potential client, what we do is we put together a pretty in-depth report for them. And one of the things that we've been harping on since pretty much the mass production of newly minted currency in 2020 was, you know, I think Milton Friedman said it best when he says, you know, printing money, it's like alcohol, right? It's great up front, but the negative effects of it come later, right? And that's now what we're experiencing. But this is something we've been harping on our clients and prospects for, I guess, 4 years now. And we've been pointing out this concern that we're going into the market that we're now in, which is a high inflation market. And that's particularly bad for business owners or employers because of the negative side effects of inflation. So one of the Fed's primary policies to combat inflation, same thing that you can, if you look at the chart here that we're seeing, is high inflation always leads to higher interest rates because the Fed's primary policy to combat inflation is to increase interest rates. So it de-incentivizes borrowing and it's literally making money more expensive. So that was the first thing that we started pointing out to our clients is we're going to enter this market where, you know, we had a artificially low interest rate market for the better part of a decade plus. Right. I mean, people getting mortgages for 3% or less, it's just that's unheard of. And we dealt with that went on for over a decade. And then we had this massive printing of new currency. And now we're experiencing these higher interest rates. So that was the first thing that we started pointing out to our clients. The other thing was that we started looking at inflation and how it affects unemployment. And at so this chart's going back all the way to 1958 to current. And at first glance, the red line there showing inflation, the gray line showing unemployment. At first glance, it looks like there's a correlation. There's actually an inverse relationship between inflation and unemployment. And again, that's particularly bad for employers because a low unemployment rate means that you have a smaller labor pool to choose from and to hire from. So that's why we started hearing things like the Great Recession, that sort of thing. It's not that there are not people out there to work. It's just that now employers need to be, well, that is one of the instances, but employers are going to be need to be more competitive with employees in a market in which money's literally more expensive. And in doing these reports for our clients, one thing that we look at is we look at their biggest labor market competitors, not necessarily their direct market competitors, but their labor market competitors. And we determine that by a number of factors. One, if you use something like LinkedIn Sales Navigator, it'll literally tell you people that are viewing this company are also viewing this company. And then we'll also look at other platforms such as Indeed, Glassdoor, then Comparably. And those platforms will tell you, oh, the people that applied for this job also applied for this job. So that's how we start to correlate the labor market competitors. We also obviously take into place things like geography and, the type of business it is. And to be clear, this is a strategy. This is something that we do for smaller clients as well. So you'll see some larger numbers here, like, businesses that have more than 200, 300, 500 employees. But we're able to do a much more in-depth study with a larger company than we are a smaller company because there's just more publicly available information. And when we started doing this back in 2021, this is one of the first comparative analyses we did with the labor market competitors is we go through all those public sites where employees are submitting information. We'll pull 5,500 forms and pull as much data as we can. And what we were noticing then was, well, the companies that had better benefits tended to have longer employee tenures. And this was one of the beginning trends that we noticed. We also, this company, the other thing that we look at is we'll look at what we call the attrition rate, how many employees are leaving, our client for a competitor and vice versa. And this company had a positive attrition rate. We identified 20 that left to join one of their labor market competitors, the 46 that left a labor market competitor to join them, and 90% of them came from these two companies here that had the lowest benefits rating. Now, correlation does not prove causation, but it's just an interesting factor that we like to point out. One thing that threw us off initially is we never actually saw a correlation between pretty much any number on here and compensation. So the level of compensation does not have the impact I think that a lot of people believe that it would. And then this was a pretty common trend that we saw was, all right, well, this is an environmental services company or a waste management company that had close to 500 employees, and we saw the same trend. And this was in February of 2022 when we did this study. Saw the same trend that companies with a higher benefits rating tended to have the higher tenures. Now, this company also had a what we call a positive attrition rate, but we couldn't identify anything specific where it was pretty even across the board of them sharing employees. And then again, the trend stayed pretty standard. Higher benefits rating, it was pretty common for them to have a higher employee tenure. Now, there are some outliers where we didn't necessarily see that, but it was just a common trend that companies with better benefits tended to have higher employee tenures. The more recent studies that we did for companies that we're working with was now we're seeing a shift, and I'm almost kicking myself that we didn't predict this. But what we started seeing now is this is a study that we did in August of 2023. The companies, there's not really a correlation we're seeing anymore between employee tenures and the benefits rating. Now what we're seeing is 2-year growth. This is specific to employee growth, employee headcount. So the companies that have the higher employee growth we're now seeing a higher, also have that higher benefits rating. And the way that we pull that benefits rating is we just look at all those public sites, right? Like Glassdoor, Indeed, Comparably, Built In is one of them. And that's how we're pulling the rating. There's definitely a margin of error in this. We'll pull the numbers from there and we average them out across all those sites. And that's how we come up with the average benefits rating. And then this trend was pretty standard. This was another study we did at the end of 2023 in November. This was a banking company, and the banking industry tends to have higher tenures, employee tenures overall, especially a bank this size. This is a pretty small bank, and they're just specific to one state. But this was where Jesse and I started noticing this trend was, all right, we really expected the companies with the higher benefits rating to have the higher employee tenures, and that wasn't the case at all. Now, again, I do want to point out here, there's no correlation doesn't prove causation. This is just what we're seeing. And this was the most recent one. This company might be an outlier in general because it's a staffing agency. They had 500-ish, 300 to 500 core employees that were their employees, and then the rest of those 1,300 employees are employees that they're staffing out. And again, we saw the companies that had the highest employee growth had the highest benefits rating. But the other trend that we started to notice then was also the companies that had the lowest benefits rating had the lowest employee growth or negative employee growth. And that was pretty standard when we started looking at most of these studies that we did in 2023. And we're seeing these same trends of full 73% of their poached employees went to the competitors with the highest benefits rating. But majority of the employees that they poached came from this one company here specifically with the lowest benefits rating. Any questions, comments, concerns on that? Curious how we pull the
What you
data?
had there is 2 year growth. That's not financial growth. That's the growth in the number of employees,
Yeah,
correct?
that's specific to employee headcount. The way that we try and pull that number is, so actually LinkedIn, depending on the industry that it is, so if it's, for example, a trades industry, you have to kind of take the information that LinkedIn will give you on that with a grain of salt. But if it's a more professional industry like a law firm, something along those lines where people are going to be using LinkedIn, it tends to be pretty accurate. And the other thing that we also do is we'll pull 5,500 forms to correlate that number or to kind of confirm that the number is at least somewhat accurate. But yeah, that has nothing to do with their actual financials. I'm assuming that there is some core, if they're having higher employee growth, that they're probably gaining market share and increasing their revenue, but that's not specifically what we're looking at for them.
One other thing I'd like to point out is notice too that not all of the companies that have the high benefits rating and the high growth, they don't always have the highest compensation. So that
Yeah.
also proves that the benefits are actually more important than the compensation itself.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever seen a correlation between compensation and growth. I mean, you would expect that to impact growth, employee growth or tenures. I don't think we've ever seen a correlation to that. But again, there's a margin of error that, right? So the way that we're determining compensation is we just look at what employees are submitting, right? When people go to like the Glassdoors, Indeeds, and Comparably of the world, they're submitting their salaries. So there's definitely a margin of error in that. However, when we've shown this to the clients and prospects that we work with, it tends to be pretty accurate. They tend to confirm like, yeah, it's about that range. It also does, again, depend on how large the company is, right? If it's a new company, Josh and I just went over one for a company that was founded in 2019 that has like 70-ish employees now. It's really difficult to do this type of study for a company like that because it's just difficult to find that type of information. I mean, they can provide us the information and we let them know, like, yes, there's definitely a margin of error in this, but we don't want too much information from them because we want that margin of error to apply across the board. So it's at least a uniform margin of error, if that makes sense. Part of the reason that we do this study is because we're portraying to the client, to be transparent here, we're portraying the value that we're going to bring to them with some of the work that we do. So we are utilizing something called a PTR plan. It's a payroll tax reduction plan, one of our core strategies that we use. And what it allows us to do is it allows us or allows that employer to help employees fund employee benefits with recaptured tax dollars. So Jesse's going to walk you through how we do that.
Okay, so like Dan was saying, one of the ways we're able to help our customers is by using the payroll tax reduction plan. Like he said, we're using this to recapture those tax dollars for both the employees and the business and give those benefits back to the employees and increase the profit margins for businesses. First, I'll go over kind of the mechanic side of it, and then I'll pass it back off to Dan so he could go over the benefits and a case study that we have at the end. I will be talking kind of quick just because we are starting to get crunched on time. But without further ado, for an employer to be eligible, they do need to have some sort of healthcare plan in place with at least 25 employees or more. We can have maybe like 20-ish employees, but we're going to go about that kind of a case-by-case basis. For the employee, they must have some sort of healthcare plan. It doesn't necessarily have to fall under the employer itself. For example, everyone here has a VA, so that would make you eligible for this plan. They also have to be full-time W-2 employees of at least 18 years old with an annual income of $25,000. Now, in this day and age, if you're not making at least $25,000 working full-time, then we got a problem. Notice there's an asterisk next to the paid time off. That's because it's not necessarily required. However, it can make things a big headache if they don't have paid time off. So here we have an example on the left of an employee before the PTR plan is put into place. Notice that they're contributing $260 to the group healthcare plan, making their net before taxes, that highlighted in yellow portion, $4,700, a little bit over. With how much they're paying in taxes below that, and their final take-home pay down at the bottom, $3,561 in this case. And then after the payroll tax reduction plan has been put into place, they have the same gross monthly salary with the same contribution to their group health insurance. However, we've layered in a pre-tax gap plan premium. In this example, it's $968, dropping their net before taxes down significantly to $3,772 that you see here. And notice now the differences in their ta the amount of taxes that they're paying. Before and after, it's roughly about $336 difference. Now, post-tax, they're going to receive a benefit claim payment. This will be direct deposited into their bank account the same day as their normal paycheck. So the only difference that the employee is going to see is instead of one paycheck hitting their bank, now they're going to get their paycheck and then this claim payment roughly between in tw that same 24-hour period.
Now, there's two ways it can be done. So that post-tax benefit claim payment can be direct deposited by that third-party administrator or provider that's doing the pre-tax deduction, or it can also be done through payroll. We leave that decision up to, the client on how they want to do it. It's a little bit easier on the employee side if it's done through payroll. The only thing that's changing in their paycheck then is there's a different line item in there, but their net stays the same, which, sorry to steal your thunder there, Jesse. I know you were getting that, but I just wanted to be give the clarification on that.
Yeah, no
But
problem.
the important thing though is it's a, the TPA handles all of that, the TPA, the reimbursement and everything. So the employer themselves, they never take constructive receipt of that reimbursement, and that's for a specific reason, right?
But now notice that there is a difference between the gap plan premium and the claim payment that's direct deposited or put into their paycheck by the TPA. In this case, the difference is a little bit over 160, it's $168, and that's actually going to be the cost of the gap plan itself. And remember, the difference in taxes that we're saving the employee in this case is $336. So that's where the 168 is going to come from there, which leaves usually some form of excess, and that's going to depend on the individual itself. Unfortunately, due to the IRS, we can't let the employee keep that as cash, so we have to use that on some sort of benefit for the employee. In this case, that 178 or that $170 is put into a group whole life plan. Now, this is just as an example, but we can customize that for the employee. Or if it's a larger business, we can maybe offer some sort of plan, like one, two, and three plan that the employees can pick from. But again, that's going to be a case-by-case basis. Usually we try to customize it the best as we can. Once we spend those extra tax, what would normally be going your taxes, it's going to drop your take-home pay down to what it was before. So you're seeing no change in your take-home pay with this increase in ancillary benefits. And this employee is a monthly example, but just to go through it one more time, they have this tax burden that is reduced by $338. The cost of the gap plan, the 168, will be applied and taken away from that 338, and that remaining 170 is applied now towards additional benefits for the employee. And the employer, they're matching those taxes, so they're also paying less in those federal taxes, so they're saving money in that way as well. These are some examples, depending on if you're just having yourself under the plan or if it's you and a spouse. The only thing that's going to change here is the amount of the premium and the claim payment that the employee is going to get. If it's just one person, it's going to be less than if you had a whole family on it. The more people that you have on it, the larger the premium is going to be, and the more savings they're actually going to get, and the more benefit that they're going to get once we put the plan into place.
I know it's not the most exciting things, gents, but that's why I'll breeze through the rest of this. Jesse just showed one benefit that, or two benefits they get there. They can get a gap insurance and a whole life plan, but there's a whole array of benefits that can be applied to. But there's some requirements of that employee as well. The reason that we have annual health assessment and licensed coaches and counselors here highlighted in red is because the employee is required to, one, take an annual health assessment. Now, that health assessment is normally done at enrollment, takes 5 minutes, if that. There's some of these third-party administrators even allow an employee to just take a selfie, and that's done on an annual basis. And then they have to engage with a licensed health professional once a month, or it's really 12 times a year, but we say monthly. And that engagement, it can be extremely minimal. It can be as minimal as them opening an email, or it can be as in-depth as them having actual virtual meetings with, a licensed health coach, nutritionist, behavioral health counselor, dietitian. That's some of the pushback we get is they go, oh, well, how do we get employees to do this? We actually have a 99.7% compliance rate with employees on this point because that participation is so minimal. But the other thing that you start to see here, so the reason that they're able to do that, this post-tax reimbursement or post-tax benefit claim payment, is because of that engagement with that licensed health professional. But also on the insurance side of things, when an employee is continually engaging with a licensed health professional, it reduces the risk on the insurer. So it allows the insurer to reduce that risk and actually financially be able to reimburse them as well. And if an employee doesn't stay compliant, they just simply get removed from the program. One of the big things is the gap insurance, and that allows the employer to reduce their expenses on medical premiums because the gap insurance is designed to cover the out-of-pocket medical expenses that a major medical plan doesn't cover. So like a deductible or that max out-of-pocket expense. And that allows an employer to literally increase the deductible or max out of pocket on their health plan without having a negative impact on their employee. And it's fully funded with recaptured tax dollars. So a lot of times we actually see the client save substantially more on the health insurance side than they do the tax side. Some of the other benefits, I mean, they have a whole menu of benefits that they can pick from. Life insurance, that's generally a permanent life insurance product like whole life or universal life, index universal life, long-term care insurance, disability insurance, hospital indemnity, accident insurance. And an interesting one that's semi-new is the identity theft protection. It's actually really, really popular. The case study itself can kind of just show you the numbers here. This was one of the companies that we actually showed. The numbers here are slightly different because we did the case study before they had a few layoffs, but it was the IT company with about 270 employees. So at a low participation rate of 50%, conservatively, they would reduce their payroll taxes, net any fees, by close to $100,000. The savings in healthcare, with the assumption that at least 40% of their employees are on their health plan, would be reduced by $76,000. So, with a really poor participation rate of 50%, we generally see 65 to 70% first year, 80% plus second year. The company would be saving $172,000 a year, net any fees. Now, to put that in the perspective of profit margins, it's an IT company, they have higher profit margins, but so at a 15% profit margin to generate a $172,000 profit, they would need to generate $1.1 million in new revenue, and this is something that we were able to provide for them without a capital cost. Normally, you increase revenue, you got to spend money to make money, right? At a more realistic rate of 80%, they're looking at close to $250,000 a year in savings, or a 1.5% equivalent of, or what we call net profit impact. So there you have it, folks. If you've had the mental bandwidth to stick around for this long, I thank you and implore you for your mental dexterity. And as always, any like, share, follow, comment, or any type of interaction with this is not only greatly appreciated, it is a phenomenal and free way to support a veteran-owned and operated business.
This presentation and all material within it are for informational purposes only and does not provide tax, legal, accounting, or financial advice. Any view and or opinions expressed by speakers are not representative of Finance for Thought, FFT, their affiliates, or affiliated brands. Please consult your own tax, legal, or accounting professional before making any decisions.